You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Catherine Dixon. Now we're talking.
Type Radio. Type Radio.
You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Donald.
I'm Lisa.
We're at the ATypeI 2010 conference in Dublin, Ireland, and our guest is Catherine Dixon. Welcome.
Thank you.
Are you religious?
Yes. Yes, I've taken to saying recently, yes, but that doesn't make me Sarah Palin.
You don't have a gun?
No. I don't know whether it's because of the age and the dark hair and stuff. I just find myself going, yes, but, yes.
You feel you need to explain that?
Yeah, a little.
And what? Why?
Oh, come on, there's people in that crazy place in the States that are burning all the Qurans, and then, you know, you just think, whoa. So, yes, I have a faith. But I find myself distancing myself or wanting to verbally disassociate myself from the outward manifestations that many people seem to be. Yeah.
Do you have rituals?
I'm a part of a small community in London, and I suppose the ritual is space, to try and create space. And I'm not very good at that on my own, so that's why I kind of join in with a small community, because that kind of brings a stronger rhythm to trying to find and practice space with nothing else in it, just to kind of reflect.
Sorry, if you can just a little bit, if you can put it in context for me, is it in relation to your work or in the way you're...
No, it's the opposite. Everything is work. So the space is like just, it's trying to get away from work, and it's trying to step outside of all of the stuff that makes us who we are in the context of all of the things that frame and position us. And it's actually really trying to step out of that and to try and see a bigger picture. Mm-hmm. And to, I suppose there are all sorts of terms for it in contemporary spirituality about centering and things. But actually, for me, I am religious, so I do believe in a God. So it's a space to kind of reposition and step outside of everyday chaos. And so the ritual will be practicing, to try and practice space, and to try and practice a rhythm of space, of creating that kind of space.
Do you see a relationship to typography in that? Now, when you describe that, when you say create space and a rhythm of space?
I hadn't, I don't know.
Is this the first time you hear this analogy?
Yeah. Like form and counterform, I suppose, maybe. I think space is always, I've always seen letter forms as architectural spaces. That's a physical space as opposed to a temporal space, but the kind of, flip side. So I it's a sense of needing a counterpoint. And it's also a sense of being accountable, so that you stop. I think it's about space, but it's about trying to, being part of a community is important as well, because contemporary society is very me, and I'm very important. Yeah, that's what we're encouraged to think, and actually it's about stepping out of that and trying to become accountable, and a sense of accountability to other people, accountable to being part of a community, accountable to, you know, issues around sustainability and that kind of thing. So, yeah.
Does this also come across in your teaching? I mean, when you teach, or not really? Because a lot of designers end up, you know, there's this sort of self-centeredness.
Ah, okay. I don't know where, well, I do know where it comes from. It comes from being taught by who I was taught by. I'm really lucky to have been taught by somebody called Jeff Fowl, who was the head of graphic design at Central St. Martin's for a number of years. Even until he retired, he was one of the most generous teachers I've ever encountered, in the sense that he never tried to contain his vision of who you were. He allowed you to be. He gave you the space to be who you were. He was always interested in who that was and where that was going. He never had a sense of where that might be for you. He just wanted you to work out where that was yourself. And I think I work with, teach with Phil Baines, and also his influence a little bit as well, which is that, you know, if people put work in front of me, my mission is not to create lots of little mini-me's. That would be horrific. But the idea is to give people the confidence with typography, which is something I think that people are totally and utterly overwhelmed by often. They're terrified. It's about rules. I'm going to get it wrong. To get them to understand that it's a language or a way of working or practicing which is accessible to everybody. They can make it their own, and they can use it to express themselves in the way that they want to express themselves. So if people put work in front of me, I'm not likely to say that's wrong. I will ask them a lot of questions about why they've done what they've done, what are they hoping to achieve. We might have a discussion about has that been achieved or how successfully they think it's been achieved. We might discuss some other options or things that they might think about. But I'm never going to say, no, do it like this. You have to give people to, you know, to make informed decisions. If my students are making informed decisions and they can have a dialogue about the work and why it is the way it is and the options that they maybe have considered or not considered, but they've made informed decisions, then, you know, that's all you want to really achieve.
You design, you write, you teach. What is more important for you now at this stage?
Okay, we're going to give a paper tomorrow, so I'm guessing that the writing is quite important right now. I'm happiest sitting at my desk with a manuscript, working with text. I'm absolutely at my most happy doing that.
But doing research?
No, designing. But yes, with the right kind of project. I mean, not just designing. If I have text, somebody's given me a manuscript, I'm working on laying it out, working with words, I am at my most happy. Teaching has, over the past 18 months, overwhelmed quite a lot. You would say in terms of income, most of my income is generated through teaching and not through design, which is, yeah, I don't know if that's ideal, but that's just how it is. And the research has, no, I've kind of kept that going, but I'm hoping to, it would be nice to kind of focus a little bit more on a few things, particularly getting some of my doctoral work that I did nearly 10 years ago, getting that published and in more accessible. That's really got to be, it's been allegedly a priority for some time. But.
And that's the article about the specification of typefaces?
Yeah, how to describe type forms. It's been interesting to be here and actually hear a few people talking about classification. I always, again, maybe I'm just being pedantic, but I always talk about description. I never wanted to classify, you know, I'm not a librarian. I wanted to be able to describe form, and I wanted to be able to, partly because of the context out of which the work arose, but, you know, I wanted to be able to look at typefaces, which is what happens. You hear people talking and they look at a contemporary typeface and they go, it's got some of this and it's got a bit of that, and oh yeah, but it's kind of brought together with references of that in it, you know, but there was a really limited language for that because everyone was looking at classifications or that's quite uncertain territory or that language is only really there for a few people. So I wanted to try and create some sort of framework that would enable my students to kind of have like a map of form, really, not literally, but like a sense of the evolution, that they could kind of look at contemporary things and look at older things and kind of, oh, okay, I understand that that's got references of that. And to understand the continuum, I think there was particularly a phase where there were books about historical overviews of typography, which kind of stopped at 1960. If you were lucky, they went that late. And then there were lots of books which seemed to focus on, you know, now, with digital mutant typefaces often, but like kind of all this stuff. And there was nothing that kind of brought them together. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, this new stuff has nothing to do with the old stuff. It's like rubbish, of course it has. It's loads to do with the old stuff. So I wanted a language that was going to be able to bring the two together. And so in a way that if you look at a postmodern building, all we seem to have in type design for a long while was, it's a postmodern type. It's one of those kind of... whereas in architecture, they can say, oh, it's a postmodern building. Look, it's got Greek this, or it's got Roman this, or it's got, you know, they have a language of structure beyond just that broader classification. So you can start to make sense. That's what I was trying to do.
And what is your earliest memory of type?
It's not a memory. Well, no, it is a memory. I only made sense of this recently. I suddenly realised that not everybody in the world had a Letraset catalogue to play with when they were little. I just kind of... My dad was what you would call a commercial artist. And in the UK, I don't know if you were... I think my dad maybe had to work occasionally at the weekends or something. Maybe my mum was like, no, you know, I've done the childcare in the week or whatever. For some reason, I would end up going to the office with my dad, which was really unusual. I would be like sat there. I used to draw loads. I mean, I was drawing all the time when I was a child. And I would be given a layout pad and probably some coloured pencils from his office and the Letraset catalogue. And I would go through, and of course I loved Mr. Bear and all the crazy fonts at the end. But it only, literally, only a couple of years ago, I suddenly twigged. Hang on a minute, my school friends wouldn't have had that. So I guess from a really early age...
So how old were you?
6, maybe. I knew what fonts were. I knew that there were all sorts of different kind of typefaces. I guess I would have understood for purpose as well, because I get, you know, the thing was organised, the crazy stuff at the back, and without knowing any of that. And I only realised that it just a couple of years ago that not everybody has that. Was, oh.
Do you still have a letter set?
No, because it would have been the one that was in my dad's studio that I would have been given. Oh, I only had it there. I didn't have it at home. That's why it was part of a big treat. You know, like if you were in the office at my dad's office, I would have the letter set catalogue to play with there.
So you could tear the pages out. And this is the one I want.
No, I had a mum that adored books, and tearing pages out of anything would have been like, that would have been sacrilegious in our home when I was a child. It's like books were like, whoa, you don't mess with books. They were everywhere and you just do. Yeah.
Your book, Science Lettering in the Environment, with Phil Baines, also their type walks you're doing with Phil Baines. How did you get to do that? How did that idea start?
I think it's a convergence of a few things. We are both people who would rather get on the top deck of a bus than the bottom. We are both people who are always looking out the windows, and when we're walking around cities, we're always like looking around us, which I've realised again is not so typical. People tend to be walking along, kind of not really looking at the streets. It never occurred to me that people wouldn't do it, but yeah. When I was working on my PhD, part of the research project I was associated with, the job was to go out and document type in use, so contemporary digital types, and you know, as they were being used. And when I was out and about on the streets photographing things and posters, you know, I would see, oh, that's great. Oh, that's nice. And just sort of building up a kind of a sense of how then lettering was being used in the environment more. And then it's just those two things of just being really interested in spaces, walking, curious, starting to piece together that story. Phil was also doing the same thing. And then I had been writing my PhD, he had been writing type and typography. And between us, we had actually really started to amass quite some significant slide collection.
Was he your teacher? He was also your teacher?
Yeah, he was in my third year. Mm-hmm. We slightly suffered at St. Martin's when I was there because we had this really lovely man called Nicholas Bidolf, but he was just on the verge of retirement, and he was so lovely in the first year. And then he retired, and we didn't really have any type teaching in the second year. We did letterpress, and I remember meeting Phil then. He was very cheeky, I remember that. And then in the third year, he came in and he like did a remedial type class. I think he like set us like some exercise, and we were like, what? And he was like, oh. So we had like emergency type teaching from Phil in our third year of our degree, which is quite funny. And I didn't really think I did typography. And then I was set a poster in my third year where I had a fear of large white spaces, like posters, which is not great as a graphic design student. And so a tutor had said to me, okay, your project is you're going to create 6 posters just based on the letters of the alphabet. So I filled a sketchbook. I never made the posters, I have to be said, but I did fill a sketchbook with ideas. And when I showed the tutor, they went, oh, you better go and see Phil Baines with that. And I was like, no, I'd have to see Phil Baines. And so I went and knocked on the door because I was, you know, you have to. So I went and knocked on the door and I was like, they say I've got to show you this. Like handed over this sketchbook. He's like, oh, have you read this? And I went, no. He went, there you go. And then I was like, I read it. And I went back, okay, read it. Like, and he's like, now read that. It was like this exchange. But yeah, then I would show him work and things that I was working on. So yeah, we've kind of developed kind of like that. So it wasn't like he was a formal tutor in that sense. I was sort of directed to him. And by the end of my third year, it became quite clear that I was really curious and interested in words. Although when I look back, my foundation tutor, before you do an undergraduate in the UK, you have to do a 1 year between school and the undergraduate. And my foundation tutor had said to me, oh, there's this thing with you and words. I was like, really? Okay. And even in the third year, when it was actually all starting to cut, I was working a lot more with type. The two girls, two of my sort of best girlfriends, said, yeah, we used to go and see Nick Bidolf in the first year, and we'd come out, and you'd go in, and he'd always give you handouts and type things, and you always came out with stuff. We never got stuff. I was like, oh, really? And they were like, no. So, yeah, it seemed that everyone else was reading. But I think for me, I just thought typography was that thing that people who knew stuff did, and I couldn't do that. So I kind of, I always thought, no, it wasn't for me, you know. I was just playing, really.
Have you ever tried designing type?
No. I did hand draw a sort of alphabet, which was used on one of the Great Ideas book jackets. It was actually first used when we did the Great Ideas series of book jackets for Penguin, art directed by David Pearson. We did series one, and then a German publisher really liked them. Gosh, I forget the name of the publisher. But they wanted a series two of German Great Ideas. And I was, I think it was in the second series for them, I was given Epicurus. So I was looking at early Greek inscriptions, and I actually found a reference I really liked in a book by Hans Edward Meyer about this evolution of writing. It's really tiny and incomplete, and I kind of used that as the basis for creating an alphabet, I suppose you would call it. But I'm so hopeless technologically at times that it was easier. I'm much stronger with my sense of my hand, and I'm not a calligrapher by any stretch, but I'm much stronger at drawing. So I hand drew and scanned, and then altered all of their thicknesses and thins by just altering pixels in Photoshop on the scan. And if I'd been able to use, like, actually to create a typeface, it would have been so much better. And I kind of keep thinking one day, oh, I will digitise that. That would be a good starting project to learn more about the process. I do feel I should know a bit more about the process. I would be more used to my students, I think. I can talk about the form and I can talk about the results. I can't help them with the process of actually what they need to do. And I would be more used to them, I think, if I could. I did actually know. I did try to go to font studio classes last year at Etypi. And I was not,
You weren't the best student, no.
I was not a good student.
But it is very complicated, especially font lab.
Yeah, I had to quit type school. I was so excited about going as well, and then I realised I was really rubbish.
But to go back to the book, that must be then, if you have such a large collection, that's a very small part, right? Or not?
Oh, really? Yeah, signs, gosh, it's a fraction. It's a fraction, and we've now gone digital, although Phil's really gone properly digital. He's got a proper digital camera. I thought I would use my old camera for much longer, but I've ended up relying on my little digital one, which isn't as good quality. But yeah, we have a huge collection. It would be our hope to get that tagged properly and get it online. The form we would really like is to get it somewhere like Flickr Commons, so that it's kind of together. Mm-hmm. And consistently tagged but accessible so other people can see it.
And will there be a second book or not?
I doubt it. I think what's happened since Signs and Lettering has come out is that it's tricky. Signs and Lettering looks like a picture book. We had to kind of disguise the writing in it, actually, because the publisher got very nervous when they said we wanted to write things. We're like, oh, really? We don't have to write things. We just kind of want the pictures. But we've always said that you can't just show pictures. It's the kind of critical dialogue about the pictures that really matters. Mm-hmm. You know, what does all this mean? Yeah, there's all this stuff out there, but what makes something work or not work, and help people to understand the difference between type and how type works and typography and letter forms and lettering works, and the kind of slightly more flexible site specificity of lettering and those kinds of ideas. Actually, you need to tease out, and the examples are great for showing that and going, okay, well, this is a great letter, but look, it's just hopelessly situated in the context. You know, there's a balance of all sorts of different factors you have to think mm-hmm. about, and it's trying to tease out all of that. I mean, the picture kind of captures that, oh, that's nice, but actually a lot of the writing has been about pushing beyond that. Mm-hmm. So it would be good to have more access to the pictures, and actually, just practically, if we have them uploaded somewhere, actually they're a lot safer than if we just have them at home. So it gives us a kind of a public backup system, really. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what our next sort of writing project would be. I mean, I think there's definitely more to be said. I think the reason that the situation more generally has changed is that now everyone's got digital cameras, everyone's got Flickr sites or blogs. Mm-hmm. There's so much more access to that. So once upon a time, I mean, you know, the graphic design publishing market thrived on basically producing picture reference books. But now the internet does that. Mm-hmm. So there's no need for publishers to be attracted to that kind of project. They're after something slightly different now because they're competing with the internet mm-hmm. for that so picture resource.
Every type conference, you see the road from the hotel to the
absolutely
venue.
Absolutely, a million times.
But all the pictures that you've taken, you see like in tenfold on the internet, on Flickr.
No, absolutely. That's why, I mean, doing the walk, yeah, we have to think about the walk as well. So we've tried to build in some kind of alleys that people aren't likely to have gone down and things that people won't have seen, but even things that they have seen. I mean, everybody will have seen the sick and indigent women, the society for sick and indigent people, of the kind of building just outside the castle on the left. But I wonder how many people have noticed that the S on one end is upside down. You know, there's that kind of thing. So there's seeing, and then there's really looking, and then there's really starting to ask questions, and then think, well, okay, what's going on with that in terms of everything around, and what's going on with that in terms of what was happening in London, and how are different cities using their lettering to create a sense of identity, and yeah, all of the sort of so what questions.
Maybe we should join you tomorrow then.
You'd be welcome. Yeah, you'd be welcome. Even if you can't make the walk, we're going to the pub afterwards for sure. Long day tomorrow.
Last question then?
Yeah.
How would you like to be remembered?
By whom? How would I like to be remembered? Oh gosh, I don't know. Yeah, I always think about this with students actually, the sort of sense of, I would really like my students to look back on the time with it and think, oh yeah, I don't know, just quite modestly, I think is what I'm trying to say. I don't think I need to be remembered particularly at all. If I'm remembered, it would be in what I've been enabled, if I have, other people to do. I think that's what I'm trying to say.
And in what typeface would that be?
Oh, okay. Oh, this is the opposite, though, having said all of that. One of my favourite typefaces is a Pouchet typeface from the 19th century, and it's got farmyard animals all the way across it. And it has different farmyard scenes on different letters, and it's just mad. In a very, I suppose this is why I like it, it's very, oh, it's French, but it's quite eccentric. And I quite like the, especially in being English, I quite like that facility we have to kind of play on eccentricity. I think that's quite healthy.
And what is it called?
I need James Moseley at hand. Oh, it's because they didn't have names, so they're things like 10-line barn, farm ornamented. Oh, gosh, I can't. I used to know it off the top of my head, but nobody's asked me about it for a while.
Send us an email.
Yeah, I will.
You
can add the link to the typeface, yeah. But the one with the cows and the sheep, because as you're turning the pages, you're going, what? You did what with a typeface? And I think it's also because at the time I was doing a lot of work on digital and hearing how crazy and wild digital type was. And then you turn the pages of a 19th century type catalogue and you go, hell, we don't even know where wild begins when you start looking at that stuff. And then I just think that's really, yeah.
It's the time when cocaine was a medicine.
Yeah, but it's true. And it's also true when you talk about not being self-centred, but these typefaces seem to like to attract a lot of attention.
I guess
that is okay for you.
No. I guess it's because that was their job.
Okay.
They were poster types. You know, that was their job, was to catch people's attention in a good way. I think partly some of the dialogues, even here at A Type I, have been about, and it's perfectly fine, there are some contexts when me, 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 and attention is just fine, because that's what life's, you know, not everything in life is a bus timetable. It's when you have me, 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 attention-grabbing typefaces in the wrong situation, mm-hmm. then it all goes wrong. So I think, yeah, so long as it was, maybe if it was little, it would be.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Type radio.